What if you could design your own dental implant system from scratch? What would you change? Less complexity? Better bone preservation? Simpler digital workflows? A price that actually makes sense? That's exactly what Biotech Dental created with the Contact Dental Implant System. Contact implants promote osseointegration, preserve crestal bone, and simplify your implant procedures. With a single prosthetic connection, streamlined surgical kits, and seamless integration into digital workflows, the Contact Dental implant is quickly becoming the go-to choice for U.S. dental professionals. Your cases will be supported by a dedicated planning team who can provide surgical guides and answer any technical questions. Experience the difference firsthand. Biotech Dental will provide your first contact implant case completely free, including restorative components and surgical planning support. Clinically proven, intuitively designed, surprisingly affordable, discover why so many dentists are switching to the contact implant system. Visit biotechdentalusa.com to learn more.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
First time in a long time, but back like I never left. Take it each day as it comes, you know me, I don't read ahead. Watch me burn down everything, BDE on the TV set. When I'm in control on the road, you could never really know what's up next.
Hello, hello, hello. Davey Portman here from Up Next Live on Post Wrestling. Welcome, everybody. I am here, but not with my usual co-host this week. I am joined not by Braden Harrington, as he is in Japan right now, having a great time by the looks of things. Hopefully we'll be able to put something out there for you guys very soon to hear about his trip. I am in the lovely Naramata, British Columbia, and I am joined by a good friend all the way over in Ireland, our man, Neil Flanagan. Neil, how are you doing today?
Hey, Davey, I'm doing well. But the more important question is, how are you doing? Because I happen to know that it's somebody's birthday today, and that somebody is your good self.
It is the big 3-6 I turned today. Yes, September the 3rd, my birthday. I'm glad I managed to do the show, though. Like, it was trying to work out the best time to do it. Braden's away. I don't like missing these shows. And it was either do it last night, which is, birthday meal and that kind of thing, and or do it early this morning. Now, the time difference makes it quite nice because it's only 9 a.m. here in British Columbia, rather than it would be noon in Toronto. So it means I get to get up, get it done, and still enjoy the rest of the day. Hopefully, yeah, still enough time to clean the Airbnb and pack before we're heading out of here. My flight's not till this evening. So I've got another full day to enjoy my birthday, which is pretty nice.
Well, I have been enjoying the social media output from both BDE members of late, because you've been posting some very beautiful scenery from where you're staying. And Braden, on the other hand, is, as you said, having the time of his life in Japan. The latest I saw was Braden and Minoru Suzuki standing side by side somewhere in Tokyo. So, yeah.
If we can work out our time difference, we want to try and do a little snap rana on our Poison Rana feed, like a little quick show where Braden can fill us in of his adventures, because I absolutely want to hear how that conversation with Minoru Suzuki went. It looks great, seeing awesome food pictures, lots of pictures of Godzilla. That DDT show looked a whole lot of fun. Whilst I'm just here relaxing, we've got a lovely pool here. Mm. There's some dogs at the Airbnb who are lovely, Louis and Oscar. We've been going to the lakes, to the beach. It's wine country here, so we've had a lot of wine. We We did a little wine tour the other day. It's been awesome. We've been indulging. So been very relaxing. And then I land at 6:47 a.m. on Thursday. And my first shift back is at noon that day. And I'm working all the way through to midnight because it's the first day of the film festival.
Yes, Tiff.
Yeah, so I'm going to make the most of this last day and just try and be as relaxed as possible. Try and wear myself out a little bit. So hopefully I do have a window seat so I can lean against the window and hopefully get some sleep on the way back. But when it's busy, it's good. It just keeps you going. It's as soon as there's a lull in that shift, I'm going to be falling asleep. But all's good. All's good. I've done this to myself and it's been awesome to be able to try and fit in a week at this time of year, which isn't easy, but we managed to do it, which is pretty cool.
Tremendous. And once you get to the end of that shift tomorrow, you'll be like, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I'm then pretty much going to bed and waking up and doing it all over again. But Sunday I should be able to relax. That would be nice. And I'll have to try and find out a day to have birthday drinks in Toronto at some point. It might be more like October 3rd than September 3rd, but we'll see. But how are you, Neil? Thank you for jumping on for this show.
I'm good. Now, listeners might hear that I have a very slight cold. I feel absolutely fine, just a little bit congested and that kind of thing. But I feel absolutely fine. I haven't got some beautiful scenery to share, apart from what I usually endure. Mm. The only pool I have is a big puddle of water at the bottom of the driveway outside my home because autumn has struck. Kind of always autumn. Where I live in the north of, kind of near the north coast of Ireland, we don't get much of a summer, but what we did have is gone. It's already raining and windy.
Any chance it's going to pick up again? I know sometimes we had a week in Toronto last week where it definitely was flirting with that autumnal weather, and then it picks up again and it's nice. So maybe you'll get a second summer.
There's a chance. The kids have gone back to school. It's that time of year. I think it's that time of year pretty much everywhere in the world. So in the West, at least. And I always associate that with a sort of fairly decent little late spurt of summer. So I think, we could very well get some nice, a few nice days. Hopefully. David, can I also just say, as someone who has got quite a few years on you, 36 is nothing. I hope you feel like a whippersnapper because you still are in my eyes.
I do still feel pretty young. It's things like, I find it difficult to find a comfortable way to sleep. Like my shoulder hurts. Sometimes I sneeze and my back goes out. Like those kind of things are definitely creeping up on me. But I still feel fairly energized. And age is just a number, right? It's what you make of it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. You're talking to the right person too. I feel much more youthful than the number attached to my name, and I think as long as you keep yourself in some sort of decent shape, and I know that you do. I had that exact experience of bending down to pick something up, sneezing, and that was my back wrecked.
You're out for the day.
For a couple of days, but normally I'm pretty good, and I've got more than 10 years on you, so you'll be fine.
I'm pretty sure aren't I the age that Steve Austin retired his first time around, and I think that's always something where when we do these old reviews, Braden and I looking back at previous wrestling things, and you look at like a John Tenta who looks like he's 50 and he's actually 23, I'm like, you know what, I'm doing all right. Doing okay. Want to shout out Jake from the Windy City in the chat, who sends a $6 super chat. Thank you very much, Jake.
Hey.
Who says, happy motherfucking birthday, AVP, hope you enjoy BC. Just pure beauty, and sends the frog emoji, the post emoji, the yes emoji. Thank you very much, Jake. Jake is one of Braden and my world champion patrons, one of our family members, as are you.
Indeed.
Neil. And it's been a bit of a crazy summer, and we have this tier. It's our family member tier on our Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/poisonrana, we do lots of reviews on there. We've recently just reviewed our Wrestlepalooza 1997. Now with Wrestlepalooza coming back with WWE's version with Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. By the looks of things, we thought it would be a good time to go back and review one of the classic ECW Wrestlepaloozas. And this one was pretty nuts. It was there's a good hour of this show, which is just absolute chaos and so enjoyable, with Jerry Lawler showing up with Rob Van Dam and Sabu taking out everyone. You've got the Tommy Dreamer versus Raven Loser Leaves Town match. You've got Terry Funk defending his championship against Chris Candido and the quote-unquote retirement of Stevie Richards. It's a really noteworthy show, and it's available to watch online for free. You don't need a Peacock. You don't need an ESPN. You don't need a Netflix. You don't need a Disney. You don't need Amazon. Whatever other service you need, it's on the Internet Archive. So just Google Internet Archive, ECW, Wrestlepalooza. And the great thing about this is they haven't dubbed over the music. So try and keep it a secret amongst us all. If you want to see Sandman coming out to Enter Sandman Metallica, this is the way to watch it. And then check out our review. So we dropped that on Saturday. Might have got lost in the shuffle with Clash in Paris going on. But Braden and I had a great time chatting about this show. Have you had a chance to watch Wrestlepalooza 97, Neil?
I haven't yet, but I was excited to see that drop in my podcatcher because it brought back some memories. I've seen it before, but I mean, I have such a vague memory of it. And when you pulled up the graphic there, I was just like, wow, Taz looks so incredibly young there, you know, compared with, you know, last week's sort of that special tribute that he got. It wasn't on television, but they did it after Dynamite last week, and they put it up on YouTube pretty quickly afterwards. So God, I wonder how much older he is there in that graphic than Hook is now. It's the, you know, these sorts of calculations you come up with these days. It's weird, you know.
So looking forward
to checking that out.
Absolutely. So we have a whole lot of shows on our Patreon. If you don't know who we are, Braden and myself, we're Poison Rana. We have our own podcast network. We do the NXT review show and, you know, jump in at the end, like end of year shows and stuff here on Post. But we have our whole other network. Every Sunday, we go live on YouTube to talk about the news and everything going on in the world of wrestling. We review AEW Dynamite and SmackDown, Raw, everything that's going on. This week, with Braden being away, I'll be joined by a guest host. So look at our socials and I'll be announcing that. But we will be going live at the usual time of 2 p.m. But then on our Patreon, we have a bunch of bonus shows, including that Wrestlepalooza review. We've also been going through every single title reign of John Cena and very recently reviewed episode 11, title reign 11, which is the weird one. Does it even really count as a title reign? CM Punk won the championship at Money in the Bank 2011. He took his ball and went home, and therefore they needed a new champion. And Rey Mysterio was crowned, and John Cena, with his best Terry Bollea impression, slid in there, taking the title. And then CM Punk re-signed, setting up for the big rematch at SummerSlam 2011, champion versus champion. We were joined by Kevin Hudson, who's another one of our family members at Poison Rana, but formerly known for his work at the Geek Centric podcast, who do fantastic stuff. So I advise you all to check them out. We've got that. We do a bunch of movie reviews. October's coming up next month, where we'll be doing a lot of Halloween themed reviews. It's always our favorite time of year. But if you are a family member, if you are a world champion, we apologize. I know we haven't got to you recently. The summer's been a little crazy. Neil, I'm looking at you as well. I know you're one of those members. Jake, thank you for the super chat. Just hit us up towards the sort of Q4 of the year, if we will. We'll be definitely powering through a lot of your picks as a top paying patron. You get to pick absolutely anything for us to review, and we mean anything. We've reviewed concerts, we've reviewed movies, wrestling shows, TV shows, absolutely everything. So have a think if you're a patron, and if you have already told me what you want to do and you're still waiting, remind me. I work three jobs. I get forgetful. I don't write everything down. So just, I don't care. You can bug me and say, oi, when's my time? I will be joined by Kevin very soon for Up Yours. And we're doing a bit of a double feature. We don't have the date completely set because just scheduling's a bit weird at the moment. But we're going to be looking at Deep Impact and Armageddon. Two films that are pretty much exactly the same, came out the same year.
That's right.
And we're going to compare and contrast and work out which one is the best. Now, it's hard to beat Aerosmith, but what does Deep Impact have to combat a bit of Aerosmith? We will find out in that review.
Intriguing. I have to say, though, Davey, for your apologies, they're not needed, really. I think the output you've managed to get done this summer has been great, because summer months are hard. Like, people need their vacations. Everybody needs a little bit of time away. And it's the same on the post side of things as well. You know, there's been a lot of sitting in and all the rest of it. So I think, you know, considering July and August, people need their breaks. You've still been loads of stuff, still been great stuff been produced. So I know that here we are in September and we're all sort of looking, going back to school or whatever else, and the things will pick up, I'm sure, the speed of releases and so on.
Absolutely. I mean, we're very lucky here. We've got a lot of people who can fill in, like yourself. We've had John Goodman, John Cena, Jack Wanan, B Detroit, and so many others helping to fill in. And I know our listeners like hearing their voices as well. So we always like making sure we're putting stuff out. So if you're not and you want to take the plunge, we do have well over 500-600 shows on our Patreon that you can go and check out. It's only $5 to become a member, and you can sign up and just sample it for a month. You can go back in our back catalog, listen to a bunch of these reviews, and if you like what you hear, hopefully you can stick around. But you can also support us by sending super chats on this very show, just like Jake from the Windy City did. You can send me a happy birthday message with a nice little super chat. It will be very much appreciated. Or you can just like and subscribe. Also, if you do want some sweet merchandise, we are sponsored by the good people at Chopped Tees, where we have some fantastic t-shirts, hats, hoodies, etc., that you can go and purchase for yourself, not just for Poison Rana, but post-wrestling and all the post-wrestling adjacent podcasts as well, as Neil is demonstrating our Poison Rana frog hat. But Neil, we're here to talk about NXT today. Just wanted to get your thoughts on some of the other wrestling that's gone on. We had Clash in Paris at the weekend, which had a tremendous crowd, and as well as Raw in Paris on Monday night. Any highlights across the two shows that, what did you make of the two?
I think that if you've got a point at one sort of slightly unconventional highlight across both shows, it's the crowd. I think far and away, the French crowds, and this was sort of, you know, the big revelation of Lyon last year, have been absolutely amazing. They just never dip in energy. And what were, I think, two pretty good shows anyway were definitely elevated by the amazing crowds that they got. Clash in Paris first, I would say I went into it with pretty low expectations. On paper, I thought the card was a two or three match card. I was kind of intrigued by how Nikki Bella might have, improved or regressed or whatever else, you know. So I was intrigued by that match, but I didn't think it was a huge PLE match. Mm. Same goes, to be honest, beforehand for Rusev versus Sheamus, which I was getting a little tired of. In the end, it was the best match probably on the show. I think it got the full five from Uncle Dave Meltzer. And despite the usual weirdness of these Donnybrook matches, where they've got like what they think is British or Irish pub paraphernalia around the ring, with, for some reason, photographs and weird stuff like that, it was a really good match. So yeah, Clash in Paris in general, I think, over-delivered, because I went into it thinking this is very much a staging post on the way to Wrestlepalooza, which they're very clearly stacking for their ESPN debut. And then on Raw, I suppose, really, it was the Becky and Punk confrontation in the ring was the highlight here, because it's very much cementing what we're going to get as soon as this coming Friday, I think, in Chicago, which is the return of AJ Lee. You know, all signs point to that, and I think that that is legitimately exciting.
Absolutely, yeah. Clash in Paris, I thought Logan Paul and John Cena over-delivered for me. Yep. I think Cena's found his groove. I think now he's wrestling more often rather than wrestling, you know, once a year. You are seeing glimpses of the old Cena back. And I think with this match and the Cody match, they structured it really well. They're doing what you want to see. You know, it's maybe not always earned, but spam finishing moves and kick out of them, and you know you're going to get reaction. And I thought they did a great job with that. I think Cena, working as a babyface, it's allowing him to be more flashy, and he's still pulling out ugly Hurricanranas and Code Reds, and I love him for it. So I really enjoyed that match. I echo what you said about Rusev and Sheamus. I'm trying to find... Meltzer gave that 5 stars. I haven't seen that anywhere yet. Is that...
Oh, hang on. Maybe this was... do you know what? I think I may have been fooled by scrolling through social media and seeing someone say that. That Dave gave it the full 5, and just accepting that this was true.
I'm not sure his results have come out quite yet. I might be wrong.
You're absolutely right. Now that I stop for a split second and think about it, I mean, the Observer isn't even due until at least tomorrow. So we won't have a rating for that until then. I'd be kind of surprised if it was the 5. So yeah.
Solid match. I mean, Sheamus is always great in those roles, right? Just hard hitting. I always enjoyed his stuff with Drew, and I think Rusev kind of fits that same mold of, yeah, just a meat match. Nikki and Becky, I was kind of disappointed in. I've always had a soft spot for the Bellas, and I think they get a lot of undeserved shit from audiences at times, and I think they... You know, there was that line the other week from EO of like, you paved the way for us, and people rolling their eyes that this is EO, one of the greatest performers of all time, saying this to Nikki Bella. But there is some truth in that, in, you know, the Bellas opening the doors for women wrestlers and getting more eyeballs on the product. And, you know, Triple H in one of those, was it in Unreal? He says 40% of their audience are women now. That was not the case before Total Divas and Total Bellas. And I think you do have to put a lot of that on them. And I think Nikki's been good in the build with the promos and stuff. It's been some of the best promos of her career. Unfortunately, the match wasn't great. And especially that like springboard, disaster kick. That was a disaster. It was nowhere to be seen. It adds fuel to those critics and kind of rightfully so. I hope she finds a groove by... The way she's been talking, she does want to be sticking around a bit more. But unfortunately, that match really, really didn't hit. Becky Lynch for me is absolutely hitting. I absolutely love that segment on Raw. I love Becky in this heel role. I know she's a great baby face, but I think this version, it's not quite the big time Bex heel. It's just more of a... She's just a dick. She's just a horrible person. And you believe it. She gets... It's not the go-away heat, but it is proper old-school heel heat that she's getting. And just the... Yeah, those slaps to Punk, knowing he can't do anything about it, and, like, just emasculating him in the process, I thought was great. I thought that was a fantastic segment. And clearly leading up to what... has been reported that AJ Lee is probably as early as SmackDown on Friday coming back to the company after 10 years away. I'm excited about that. I was a big AJ Lee fan back in the day. Her along with the Bellas, I think she was one of the first women wrestlers to have a t-shirt on sale and things like that. And in sort of men's versions, like I had lots of friends with that like Black Widow AJ Lee t-shirt. And it's a great way to introduce her in this feud with Seth and Becky while this this Seth and Punk feud seems to be going on forever, but still has life to it, I think. So that was definitely my highlight on Raw this week.
Yeah, and completely agreed on Becky. I thought, I mean, her promo work has been tremendous. This version of heel Becky's great. I really enjoyed her in Dublin, you know, because that's a home crowd, and what she managed to do was to get them to shit on her, which is not always the easiest thing to do if you're a Becky Lynch and you're, you know, and you're in Dublin. So that was great too. I'll also say just quickly on the Clash in Paris botch, which, you know, has got all the attention and has been clipped and shown to death. You know, when you look at it, you sort of wonder, well, where's Becky meant to be? I mean, because Nikki can't do a disaster kick or, you know, a springboard kick halfway across the ring. So it's not all on her. I think there's just maybe a miscommunication of when that timing of that spot was supposed to happen. It's very difficult for us to know, but I certainly wouldn't just say, oh, it's a Bella botch, you know, which a lot of people have. And I think that's unfair. There's blame to go around when these things happen.
It was almost a bit of a Samoa Joe moment, wasn't it? It's just the walk away from the move.
Yeah.
Like the flip to the outside stuff. But we're here to talk about some NXT. Have you been keeping up with NXT? I know you write reports for lots of different things on the post-wrestling site, but what is your involvement with NXT? How into it are you these days?
I'm pretty into NXT at the minute. The last time I sat in with you, Davey, to do Up Next was easily a couple of months ago at this point, maybe even longer than that. And at that time, I really wasn't watching it weekly, largely because I'm not really called on to write reports on it early in the week. It's when I sort of have to keep my UK time office hours, so staying up late on a Tuesday night can be tricky. But I've fallen just into the habit of watching the version, and it's very convenient watching the version that Netflix has up by Wednesday, just as I did today, with the breaks taken out and so on. And so it's a very breezy watch at that point. And I think it's a very entertaining show at the moment. I don't know whether that's been because I haven't been watching it regularly over the last, say, 2 years or so. I don't know if that's been a gradual uptick in quality. I mean, you're far better placed to say so than me, but certainly I've been enjoying it of late. And I think that the episode we're about to talk about was very entertaining.
And how have you found all the kind of cross promotion? You have your, you know, your LFG guys there, you have your Revolve guys there, you have your TNA talent as well. At times, like, Brayden and I find it a little too much at once. It's a lot of names you don't know about that are being thrown at you. And okay, what is the focus here? Are we NXT? Are we TNA? Like, what are we doing? Some weeks I think balance is more than others, but also this is kind of what NXT is for. It is the, like, final feeder system before going to the main roster, and it is a way to assess all these other talents from other places. What have you been making of that since they've been quite heavy with doing the cross promotion?
Yeah, that would be one of my slight criticisms, is that I would rather they concentrated on the core NXT roster, the sort of people that you want to see move to the next, let move up to Raw and SmackDown at some point. And like you said, I mean, in fairness, last night, Callie Armstrong, who I was not very familiar with, I don't watch Evolve on a regular basis, so that's just really a name to me that you know, she's the Evolve champ. You know, elevating her to an episode of TV, I thought was kind of worthy, but I do get the point that there's a little much, because unlike the main roster, which is, you know, got between it, you know, nearly five hours of show each week, plus a monthly PLE. You've got 2 hours of NXT, and you're also bringing in the Evolve people, the LFG people, and you've got the TNA world champion also being on NXT every week. I don't know. It does feel a wee bit much sometimes. So yeah, I agree with you on that.
Well, let's go into last night's show, NXT from September the 2nd, 2025. And we're kicking things off right away with Jada Parker taking on Lash Legend. This feud has been brewing for weeks and weeks now, way back from the, what was it, the Evolution Battle Royal. And they go right into things. We have Lash gets the first big move with a big splash for a two count and then does her double dribble, the move I absolutely hate, where she she holds Jada and she just bounces her head off the middle and top rope. We see during the match, Javon Evans showing up. He's been missing since Heatwave. And they actually showed this clip of him arriving twice, I noticed.
Yes, I noticed that
and made no comment of the first time. Jada then goes up top and slips, but manages to follow through for a two count. Jada then drapes Lash across the second rope to go for her like butt drop, but gets caught with a choke slam. Not too much hype from this one from Lash, only a two count. We come back from the break and Lash Legend is in control. She goes for a second splash, but this time misses. And Jada repeatedly tries to knock Legend down with shoulder blocks, eventually hits a big diving shoulder block to take her down, followed by a backstabber and a blockbuster, but only a two. Jada then goes for hypnotic, but gets caught with a backbreaker from Lash for a two count. And then Jada drapes Lash across the middle ropes, hits the butt drop, and does the high step before delivering a Samoan drop. And then Lash rolls out the ring with Jada still holding onto her hair. And they're fighting on the floor. There's a big pump kick from Lash. And then Lash hits this, I think she's calling it the Lash extension, which is like a almost like a backbreaker position into a bulldog. She lands it on the announce table. It didn't look very good. She rolls Jada into the ring, hits the Lash extension again, and Lash Legend pins Jada Parker. And after the match, Jada attacks Lash, continuing the feud as she slams her into the ring steps and then delivers hypnotic through the barricade.
Yeah, I thought this was a solid opener. I mean, as you mentioned, one of the things I have to mention is the Lash extension. I think as a finishing move in the middle of the ring, it looked pretty good. Onto the table, which of course, you know, Vic and Booker had to sell. It looked like she was just carefully placing her opponent down. That looked pretty bad. The missed shoulder tackle into the post during the match didn't look great either, but I'm nitpicking, you know, so that's a hard move to sometimes get right. I thought it's a solid opener. I was watching this at a weird time where Netflix hadn't quite removed all of the commercial breaks. So this was the only match where the commercial break was still in when I started watching it. And it was so noticeable because I'm not used to watching live, as I mentioned before. But as the 3 minute countdown was happening, and the match continued, we got this endless chin lock, one near fall, and then an endless waist lock. It was back from break, which is kind of interesting. You see that on Raw and all the time as well. If you're in an international market and you go to break, but I enjoyed this match and the post match too, and I think that this. This rivalry will continue, as is clear, but it's a pretty good one.
It is something that I find strange, like considering majority of the world have WWE on Netflix now, and we are watching the breaks, how much of a break they do take during these 3.5 minutes. Like, I know the US audience is what they favor, but there's more people outside of the US watching these than the US, you know? I just find it odd. I'm not saying you need to be doing 450s through tables or anything, but the headlock rest hold should just be done with now, I think, in wrestling. I wasn't quite as high on the match as you were. I think there were just a few like clunky moments throughout it. I have been enjoying the feud. I think both Lash and Jada have a lot of upside. But Lash, when she's playing to her strengths, is really impressive. And I think that's when she comes across the best, you know, when she's against someone like a Nia Jax or even an Otis, where she's like body slamming them and you really get an appreciation of her strength. But there is still some awkwardness in her wrestling, which she's been there, 5 years now, I think, 4 or 5 years, and it's still coming through. And I think Jada Parker is someone who is better when she's against people better than her. I think it brings out the best of her. So I've enjoyed the feud, and I thought some of the like more brawling stuff in this match was good, but there was a little bit too much clunkiness for me at this stage in both of their like developments.
I think that's a fair comment. And I will say, like, you know, going back to Lash's sort of short run on the main roster, when it almost looked like she might get tied into the Bianca and Jade sort of scene, she was probably booked to her strengths a little bit better. You know, some of the moves are basic, but things like the warrior splash that she does, I mean, that and that the physique that she has, all of that's, you know, very impressive. I think when she's stretched a bit more in a match like this, it can expose a little bit. And as you say, this many years into the system, perhaps you would want more. But I enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah, I really thought, I mean, Naomi flourished on her own, but I really thought her coming in as Naomi's heavy for that whole Jade Cargill feud would have been a great elevation of Lash, and she'd have fit in that role pretty well. So we go backstage where Blake Monroe interrupts Ariana Grace and Stax, who are just all over each other. Stax has seemed to completely forgotten about this Heritage Cup that I believe he is still the champion, but bringing his real life relationship with Ariana to screen. And if you've seen any of their like TikToks and things, they're pretty funny together. And I think they should try to get that across more on screen than they have been. So Blake Monroe interrupts, and this is second week in the row we're getting the very obvious Maybelline plug. She goes, "Oh, Ariana, is that Maybelline? Why, yes, it is Maybelline. Would you like to borrow my Maybelline? Yes, sure. Let me have some of your Maybelline," as they're applying makeup. And Monroe is just saying how upset she is about Jordan Grace. And Ariana makes it clear that, yes, I am a Grace, but I am not related to JG. And that's when Jordan Grace comes in, going after Monroe, when Callie Armstrong, the Evolve Women's Champion, steps in between them and says, "You ruined my NXT debut the other week. You got a problem with Blake Monroe. Well, now you have a problem with me." And this will set up Callie Armstrong versus Jordan Grace for later in the night.
Yeah, the product placement thing here overshadowing the entire segment due to its terribleness, I think. And Way made this point about the Fireball Whiskey segment on SmackDown this past Friday. If you're going to have product placement and tie-ins with your sponsors, don't you have a team of writers to try and do something with it, make it a tiny bit interesting or funny or entertaining, you know, just this kind of, you know, making sure they mention the name of the product loads of times and have it sitting front and center in the screen. It's just an eye roller, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's so basic.
Hiring proper writers in wrestling? Come on, what are you thinking? We go on and Javon Evans comes out. He's in the ring and, well, Javon's kind of lost his smile a little bit. He's there and he says he hasn't been here since Heatwave. And I know you all expect me to be excited and find the positive in everything, but after Heatwave, I just can't do that. And I thought I had it when I beat Trick in Philly. I had great advice from legends and I've had great opportunities, and Heatwave just felt different. I felt like if there was ever going to be a night I was going to become champion, it was going to be that night. I even called my little sister, telling her I was going to be the youngest NXT champ in history, but I lost. I heard the crowd erupt. I heard the three counts, but then I saw Oba's foot under the rope. And the moment I reacted to that was the moment Oba capitalized. And next thing I know, I saw Oba's hand in the air, and I want to apologize for letting you all down. And the crowd are all chanting, "We still love you," when we see a motorbike show up in the parking lot. And Javon's like, no, it can't be. We go to the motorbike again. We see these boots getting off the bike, walking towards the arena. And then we hear Undertaker's gong, when Josh Briggs comes out to a sea of boos. I always love the fake out, and I thought Briggs was pretty good here coming out, as we have had Undertaker interact with Javon recently. So Josh Briggs comes out. He is very hated in NXT right now. He says, "Oh, you were expecting someone else, someone to come out to give you words of wisdom. Well, you are everything I hate about the NXT locker room. You're 21 and already main eventing PLEs, title match after title match." And Josh says, "Your problem is you think you can just wait. What you should have done is walked right up to Oba, put your finger in his face and demand a rematch." And Javon goes to say something and Josh tells him to shut up. And he says, "Try being me. Try waiting for years for an opportunity, knowing you're better than everyone in the locker room. You want someone to motivate you and give you your gold star, but that ain't me. You ain't going to be Oba. You're good, but you're not good enough." And Javon's like, "Oh, you think you know me?" When Briggs boots him in the face, grabs a steel chair and chokeslams Javon right through it. What have you made of, what did you make of this? And what have you made of Josh Briggs recently in this heel role?
Really good. The crowd tell the story, don't they? They really, really hate this guy. And I think he's doing a good job as a heel. Legitimate heat here. He's kind of stealing a few moves from The Undertaker, not just sort of the fake out entrance, but, you know, the big boot and all of that. And we see a wee bit more of it later on in the show. I also want to, you know, give Javon a little bit of a shout out here for some, by wrestling standards, some pretty good acting, I think, in his opening kind of segment. You know, this is not a difficult crowd. It's not a tough crowd at the PC. But, you know, they did everything to sort of, you know, boost this kind of, you know, we still love you. And, you know, and then the heat for Josh Briggs, which, and I know this is not new to this week. It happens all the time. But I do enjoy the shut the hell up chance that they're clearly instructed, I think, probably beforehand. Yeah. To do, guys, we're on broadcast TV at 8 p.m. You can't swear, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it very effective heel work here, even before this impressive looking spot that Davey has the still on screen of the slam into the chair.
Yeah, I really like this. I like both Javon and Briggs. I think this is a good thing to distract Javon. I imagine probably they're holding out till probably Stand and Deliver, which is quite a way away, but it seems to be that's the moment that they really like culminating these stories and crowning their new champion. So it could be a way away until we do have Javon win this. So we need some other feuds to keep him busy. I really like Briggs in this heel role. I think he's someone that they should have elevated a while ago. Since there's been a bit of a lack of depth in the upper card for the men's division. And I think you're right with the PC. Sometimes they get on my nerves, but for the most part, they know what role they're supposed to play. And they do lift a lot of these scenes, especially here, the support for Javon and just pure hatred for Josh Briggs. My one thing is I don't see, like, Briggs has been here a while. I think it would be a good idea to have him flirt with this NXT title, even give him a run with it. I do question where he fits in on the main roster when that time comes, which is my one concern with him. But I think he's been doing good work, and I think he's solid in the ring, and I think he's really come into his own with this character as well.
I agree with you on that. On the main roster, it's difficult to see him as a breakout star, particularly on his own. Perhaps member of a stable of some kind, you know, is the sort of ceiling I see for him right now. And that's with him doing some of his best work. So, it's tricky. I don't think his ceiling is extremely high, but where he's slotted right now, he's doing well. So, you know, that's good.
We get an NXT focus on Xia Brookside. the daughter of Robbie Brookside, who says she's faced the best the world has had to offer. She was in the Mae Young Classic, NXT UK, and now in TNA. And now she gets to face Candice LeRae. And Candice may be a former speed champion, but she's never faced me. We then cut to Candice, who says she's just that Zaya is just a stepping stone on the way to her becoming two-time speed champion. Any comments on this?
Not really. Very quick. I do still think it's good to have, as short as they are, little vignettes that tell you who someone is. You know who Zaya Brookside is after this, or at least something about her. We get a much better vignette later on in the show, which we'll come to. But I would like to see a little more of this on the main roster on occasion, just to remind you that these characters are supposed to have, you know, a personality and an inner life. And I'm talking about, you know, a mutual favorite of ours, Davey B-Fab. You know, why not? You know, she's just sort of hanging around with the prophets these days. Why not have a 90-second little sort of thing, you know, just telling you who B-Fab is?
Justice for B-Fab.
Yes.
Neil, I'm not sure if it's on my end, but I think there's a little bit of a delay on your mute button. I'm just missing kind of the first, like, second of things you're saying. I don't know if it's your end or my end, but...
Things seem set up okay here, Davey. I'm not touching mute.
You haven't been pressing mute? Okay. It might come out fine on the recording. It might just be my end here, but... we go backstage with Hank and Tank, who are in the locker room with Obafemi and Ricky Saints. They're preparing for their big 8-man tag match against Dark State in the main event. And Hank is saying, tensions are high between you two, referring to Ricky and Oba. But tonight you get to get your hands on Dark State. And Hank tells Oba that this is absolute Ricky Saints and he will lead us to victory. And then Tank is telling Ricky that Oba is the most dominant NXT champion in history. And tonight he has Ricky's back. And Hank and Tank then say they're going to go off to catering, which I don't know if it's a good idea about 40 minutes before you're about to go and wrestle. But that anyway, they're going off to catering and Ricky tells Oba to be locked in tonight. Oba says, don't worry about me. Worry about yourself. So Hank and Tank trying to get through this partners that might not get along type thing, trying to motivate both guys to be on the same page. We go to our next match, which is, I'll give it its full name, the WWE Women's Speed Title Number One Contendership Tournament semi-final match. Yeah, it's Candice LeRae versus Zaya Brookside. The rules of this are it's just 3 minutes. The winner of this will advance to the number one contenders final, and that winner will face Sol Ruka, the speed champion, in a 5-minute match, but here only three. So Zaya comes in with some drop kicks and running knees in the corner. And as we go to minute two, the lights change from blue to orange to signal that time is running out. Zaya is on the top rope, but Candice knocks her to the floor. And then Candice sees that time is ticking down, goes after Zaya, but Zaya catches her with a roll up for a two. And then a low kick to the face. Candice goes for a lion salt, but misses. And then Zaya follows up with the code breaker for a two count. And then the lights turn red as we have 1 minute left. Zaya then backs Candice into the corner. There's a tornado DDT from Candice, followed by a senton to the back. And the lion salt for the win with 25 seconds left on the clock. And so Candice will face the winner of next week's match, which is from... between Triple A's Fabi Apache and NXT's Lainey Reid.
Yeah, I don't know what really to say about this, Davey. I feel like, for one thing, I was not much of a fan of the Speed Championship when it lived on social media. I didn't really follow it. I didn't really watch the matches. I know it gives some stakes to some matches that you can put onto NXT on weekly television and have a final at a PLE. But this 3-minute time limit, just, I don't know. The format doesn't particularly work for me. The stakes in the form of the Speed Championship, I think, are very low and not too many people care about it. I mean, I've seen matches on NXT and on all sorts of wrestling shows that are 3 minutes or less, that don't have this sort of clock and the lighting and all the rest of it. And I think, you know, they're almost better for it, because it's this weird peril that a match has to be won within 3 minutes. And it almost takes you out of it too, because so many matches can't be won in 2.5 minutes. That it just, I don't know, there's a realism gap here as well. I don't know. I don't love this, in short.
Yeah, I think there's a way to make it work, but I don't think WWE have found that way. I don't mind having, like, I know a lot of people don't like the Heritage Cup and the rounds matches. I think championships should have different things about them, whether that's weight classes or, you know, if it's a ranking system with wins, losses, it's like, well, your win-loss record is this, so you can only go for the North American title or whatever. Like, I think there should be things that differentiate it. And I always think wrestling is a variety show, so you should have a different style. But these two wrestled a match like it was a normal match that they had 3 minutes, like, allotted by their agents to do. I think if you're going to do these matches, like, I remember, and, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not comparing Xia Brookside versus Candice LeRae to Kenny versus Okada. I am not. But I remember going into that G1 match going, how, we've had two of these matches go an hour. How are they going to do this match in 30 minutes and still have a winner? And they wrestled a match with a lot more urgency, where they're pulling out more things, like more big moves early, because they're trying to win the match within that time limit. And I think that's how these matches should be. Think of, like, the beginning of Eddie Kingston versus CM Punk, where right away they're just punching the ever-living shit out of it, out of each other. That match was never going to last long because of the style they were wrestling. These two just weren't their regular style, and it just happened to be that Candice won within the time limit. So I think for this to work, I want to see a lot more urgency. I want to see a lot more big moves. You know, the bell goes and someone goes for their finisher right away, that kind of thing. Imagine you're playing a 2K match where your specials meter and all that is, like, starting right on full. I think that's the only way you're going to make these matches work. But the thing is, we see plenty of matches on NXT that last this time anyway, and this didn't feel any different from any of them, apart from the clock and the lights.
Yeah, that's absolutely my main issue with this, is that this is a match the length of which you sometimes get anyway on AEW, on NXT, on Raw, on SmackDown. And it was wrestled, like you said, as a short match rather than a race against time. It does remind me that when Speed began, I think I did watch the very few first matches on Twitter, and they did have a little more kind of that complete sprint sort of energy to them. So yeah, I mean, they've shown that they can do it. I've already said this, but one of my major issues is that this is all leading to a kind of a meaningless title anyway. You know, by the time we get to facing Sol Ruka for the title, I don't think anyone really cares that much about that belt.
Yeah, I don't know how long they're gonna keep the Speed title around. I do see it eventually just being a prop for the eventual breakup of Zaruka. But you also have the Women's North American Championship you can do that with. So I don't know, really. I think we'll see it, like we've had the Cruiserweight title and things like that in the past, eventually start fading out.
What if you could design your own dental implant system from scratch? What would you change? Less complexity? Better bone preservation? Simpler digital workflows, a price that actually makes sense? That's exactly what Biotech Dental created with the Contact Dental Implant System. Contact implants promote osseointegration, preserve crestal bone, and simplify your implant procedures. With a single prosthetic connection, streamlined surgical kits, and seamless integration into digital workflows, the Contact Dental Implant is quickly becoming the go-to choice for U.S. dental professionals. Your cases will be supported by a dedicated planning team who can provide surgical guides and answer any technical questions. Experience the difference firsthand. Biotech Dental will provide your first contact implant case completely free, including restorative components and surgical planning support. Clinically proven, intuitively designed, surprisingly affordable, discover why so many dentists are switching to the contact implant system. Visit biotechdentalusa.com to learn more.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We go next to the men's locker room, where Josh Briggs walks in and tells them to keep talking, as they don't have the balls to say what they're thinking right to his face. And you see Wesley and Highrise just get up and leave. And Kale Dixon from Chase U says, well, I have the balls to say what you did to Javon was wrong. And Uriah Connors says that you're meant to be a locker room leader and you can't go around bullying people. So Briggs gets in their face and Andre Chase steps in trying to calm things down. And Dixon and Connors say that they're going to go to Ava and get Andre Chase a match against Briggs so he can school him. So as always, Chase U getting Andre Chase into trouble.
Yeah.
So that match will come later tonight. What are your thoughts on this iteration of Chase U?
It serves its purpose, I guess. You know, I mean, obviously, Andre not happy with his students getting him into this fix, you know, by the end of the segment. And it's kind of a rinse and repeat thing, you know. Andre, this iteration of Chase U, yeah, it's kind of seems to be set up for Andre to be a fall guy all the time. And there's a place for that, I guess, in a weekly show. But I hope they go a little in a further, you know, they switch direction a little bit after some time with this, because
I wonder if they're keeping Chase around. Like, I wonder if he's done any producing or training or anything like that at NXT, because they had a much stronger version of this group with Duke Hudson and Thea Hale. And if you were ever going to try this group on the main roster, it would have been with them.
Yeah.
And to just be treading water for Andre Chase to go out and have 2-minute squash matches where he loses, I don't get why they're holding on to these guys. I think both Kale and Connors have something about them. I think they fit this role, but it's just, we've had Chase U go on for so long, and eventually it does have to be a thing to move these people up. So I do question it. We go to Dark State, who says the world seems confused. They say they're fed up of being stepped over. They talk about Osiris, who was in the New Orleans Saints, and Cutler says he was humiliated on LFG when he was cut. And it shows a clip of Bubba saying that if you were to show up in my training school, I'd give your money back and send you back home, as you're not entertaining enough. Dion Lennox talks about being pushed around by Trick Williams, as we're seeing like clips from Dion when he was in his geeky glasses days, book reader days, being kind of picked on by Trick, and Oba saying you're not good enough to be champion. And we see Oba rolling his eyes when Dion says, I'm going to go after that one day. He says, we were security for people that they were better than. And we're seeing them dressed up as security in Carmelo and Trick Williams segments. And they then bring up all these other wrestlers who have been security in the past who became superstars. And we see the likes of Sheamus on there. They say, you're looking at four future greats, not championship material, huh? well, look what we've got in our hands. And they say that they're brothers. They're brothers from a different background, but the same struggles. And when Dark State strikes, ain't nobody safe. We've kind of heard Dark State saying these things, but I thought this was a much more coherent version of it. They stripped away the unintentional gay innuendos from Cutler James in this promo as well. But I kind of like the use of showing them in, in their backstage roles as security, as jobber cops, as we call them here. Clips from LFG and going back from from Dion Lennox's first gimmick in NXT. I thought they actually finally made sense of what their purpose is, why they're together, and providing evidence of why they're pissed off and trying to take on the whole roster.
Yeah, I thought this was very effective. My only nitpick of it was it's slightly overproduced. The drums throughout this, maybe it was because I was watching with my headphones on, but seemed to overpower the whole thing and the constantly moving camera. But I really enjoyed the fact that they're laying out their motivations and the use of the library footage and the photographs, you know, in the football uniform and things like that. It sort of shows, you know, picture's worth a thousand words type thing. You know, this is, we were written off, you know, we were told we weren't going to amount to anything, and look at us now, we've got the championships and all of that. And I think it was pretty effective. It worked rather well.
I even quite liked acknowledging that they are the people who played security. Like how many times we see pictures of, you know, wrestlers back in NXT when they were a rosebud or security or whatever, and you kind of have to just accept that they were a completely different person. Whereas now it's like, no, it's part of it's part of NXT training is your security for people and that kind of thing. I quite like that. This was definitely a step up from Dark State for me. We go forwards where Trick Williams is in the ring and he says, last week I did promotional piece and I meant every word. I said I'm the greatest NXT superstar who ever lived and no one from past or present came out to question that. One of two reasons. First, they know that it's true and I'm the greatest NXT superstar who ever lived, or they don't care about NXT anymore. And for the last 3 years, we've been busting our ass here. And I see people coming here on buses, scooters, even walking for the past 5 to 10 years to watch what we do here at NXT. And they don't even care about you. And I don't blame them one bit. Because once I move to Raw and SmackDown and have my nice place in the suburbs, you ain't seeing me again. And all the favorites that you love, well, they don't love you. And obviously, this was queuing up for former NXT talent to come out. And were you surprised one little bit that it was DIY? It's always DIY, isn't it? It's always Ciampa. It's always Gargano.
Yeah, in their baby face role as NXT legends.
Yeah, absolutely. This isn't who they were. This isn't their SmackDown characters. This is very much NXT. Even wearing their old NXT DIY t-shirts there. So DIY come out and they get in Trick's face. Sorry, I've lost my notes there. They say there's welcome home chants, and Johnny, first of all, says, we do love you, and says it's actually their 10-year anniversary since their debut. And Ciampa questions, you mean nobody who's ever walked into this place is better than you? He goes, you're a two-time NXT champion, right? Well, I'm a two-time champion. And he then says, Goldie, I still love you. And Ciampa then says, wait, didn't you, Johnny, hold the NXT North American Championship 3 times? And he goes, yeah, that's right. Ciampa says, you know what? We've never been TNA champion, but we did win the Tag Team Championship. And Johnny, you became the first ever Triple Crown champion. And I bet you had a partner who had huge muscles and a glorious beard. And Johnny goes, yeah, he used to be a little grumpy after that logo showed up in the corner, but he was fine. And it doesn't matter if you were a demon or a hugger, undisputed or glorious. The one thing we have in common is the love for these people and this brand. And Trick goes to speak when Ciampa puts his hand on the mic and says, "Don't speak when I'm talking." And Ciampa says, "There are two guys who bled black and gold and paved the way for you. And it's a tag team you're familiar with. Three letters, D-I-Y. And Trick tells him not to put his hands on him and says his girl could whip his ass. And says, "No disrespect, you've done a lot." But then Trick Williams came along and he took your accolades and kicked you back in the past where you belong. And Trick is still the greatest champion of all time. Let's talk about it. So Johnny and Ciampa say, "Yeah, I don't want to talk about it anymore." Ciampa shoves Trick. There's a super kick from Johnny. And then meet me in the middle as they lay out Trick Williams. But yeah, always a fun segment from DIY. It's always fun seeing them back. They do go to the well a little bit. I would quite like to see some other NXT legends of the past come back, but it always seems to be Johnny and Ciampa. If in danger, like, go for them.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful that by the time we get to Homecoming, we'll see more than just DIY involved. I envisage that. I mean, Full Sail and the PC have a lot of similarities, but it does have its own little kind of identity. And I was sort of hoping that Homecoming, they might for one night go black and gold and, you know, they bring back a few more people. You might, you know, see Sammy or, you know, a few other sort of people who have been very heavily associated with NXT. So but all that said, though, I think that Tommaso and Johnny did a good job here, and Trick as well. Trick is really good on the mic. I enjoyed all of that. You know. Once I get my $1 million home, you know, I'm never seeing you guys again. I'll be in Paris, you know, with the Raw and SmackDown people and all of that. And the way it escalated, I enjoyed it. And I think later in the show we get, you know, that this is, we're not done here. You know, Trick is going to address all of this next week. So, I a good segment, a fun segment.
Do you see Trick getting a partner for this? And if so, who?
I think so. I think the idea of a handicap match did spring to mind, but I thought in the end, I thought, no, it would be very unfair to DIY to sort of have him win that. You know, we would need something more competitive. So could it be Mello for, you know, 1 week only making a return?
I'd like that. I'd like it to be Mello, like mend that bridge. And then when Trick moves up, just them taking out Miz. And then you have Trick and Mello, who I think both will be much better on the main roster with each other than apart. So I like that idea. Homecoming's in 2 weeks, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So next week we'll probably set up whatever this match is going to be. And just some breaking news as well, that AEW All Out is being moved to 3 p.m. Eastern time. So, yes, this was tweeted out by the Scotiabank Arena. It's been moved to 3 p.m. And also, all HBO Max subscribers can now purchase AEW pay-per-view shows at an exclusive low price point of $39.99. Also, there's NordVPN. Yes. But, yeah, what do you make of that, the move? Obviously, this is, you know, they thought they'd be okay against Brock versus Cena, but AJ Lee is just too much for AEW and moving the show earlier in the day.
I'm a little surprised that it's happening today, that we get this announcement today. It looked like they were going full bore for, you know, just an FU to WWE and saying we're going to stick to our plans. Had this happened pretty much as soon as WrestlePalooza or very close after that had been announced, I'd have been much less surprised. I am a little surprised that they're moving it to 3 p.m. at this point. I don't really blame them. I think it's a very, it's going to be a tough day for them otherwise. But yeah, it looked as though with all of the programming notes, you see, let me get this straight. They had announced, I believe, at least, if not AEW, it was on the TNT and TBS schedule that there would be this 1 hour lead-in at 7 p.m. On Sunday into All Out, this sort of special tailgate special on TNT at 7 p.m. on that Saturday. And that was in the TNT schedule announced last week. And that's when I thought, okay, they've absolutely made their bed. They're going with the 8 p.m. start for All Out. And here we are today. I think they've obviously been in some sort of feverish discussions about what to do and made the decision to bring it forward.
I honestly think they should just, moving forward, have their shows be afternoon. You know, their shows are longer. They're still in the pay-per-view business. They're not a streaming service. Like, you, as you know, Neil, like 3 p.m. Toronto time is 8 p.m. In the UK. And, you know, wherever you are in Europe, it's going to be around 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., depending where you are, which is great. So you're going to get those live European buys. And I just think it covers so much more of the world to be able to watch this. And it's a weekend where majority of people aren't working. It really doesn't make much difference if an event starts at 3 or it starts at 7 or 8 if you're watching at home on the weekend. I just think they should carve this out as their time slot moving forwards. I thought, you know, going all in Texas at that time mm-hmm. was an awesome time of day to watch it. And you feel like I'm looking at my Twitter feed and that, and you're seeing all your UK friends watching along as well. And I doubt WWE are going to be moving their big pay-per-views to the afternoon either, unless it's a Paris or something like that. So the only thing they're going to contend with is the NXT, if they want to counter program with NXT. And we've seen in the past that, if anything, that hurts NXT, not AEW. So watch this space. Poison Rana and Post Wrestling did have an event scheduled to start at 2 p.m. So obviously that's up in the air. We're going to have a discussion, the four of us, to see what we're doing with that. Obviously, we're all going to be in the city that day, so we'll be able to see you guys or whatever somehow. But we do need to talk to the venue about that, because there is, we do get a theater crowd, because there's a couple of theaters right opposite us. So it might be difficult to do our event earlier in the day, but we'll come up with something and get back to you. See if people want to do breakfast or whatever. But yes,
that was my immediate thought on a personal level. I'm not going to be in Toronto, but what a bummer, for you know, in the sense of like people, the hangout is such fun. I've been to a bit, I was Forbidden Poor, another of your pun from the mind of Davey Portman.
That was Braden's one.
Really? Was it? Okay. I always, this is a disservice to Braden, I'm sorry, but I kind of assume that you come up with all of them.
I actually can't remember if All Loot was me or someone else, but I'll take credit for that. But that could have very well been Braden as well. I'm not sure.
But I just hope you get something worked out so that people who are in town, you know, can get together and say hi.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's get back to some NXT. We see Ava backstage with Javon, who is all battered up from that chokeslam through the chair. And Ava tells Javon that if he promises not to interfere in Josh Briggs' match tonight, he will get a match with him one-on-one next week, and security escort him out. We then see Tavion Heights and Ethan Page, and Tavion is pissed from last week's beat down and being draped with the Canadian flag. And Ethan Page says, "You actually disrespected the flag and 40,000 Canadians in having that on your body." And Ava goes to make a match, and Ethan mocks her and says, "Oh, let me guess, you're going to make a flag match for next week." And Ava goes, "Well, no, actually I wasn't, but now you mention it, sure." let's make it a flag match for next week. So, yes, we've seen different iterations of flag matches, haven't we? We've seen you have to grab the flag. We've seen you can use the flag as a weapon, I think. We've seen you have to get your flag. And I think there was one, was it Rusev and Jack Swagger? You had to take your flag and, like, put it on the ring post. And
I think that may have been,
I wonder what kind. They're never very good. But
no, they're never very good. There was one also with Rusev and Cena. And I know this was Battleground because Battleground got a name for being like one of the worst pay-per-views that was in the calendar year for WWE. And in that one, they had to get their flags from somewhere, I think in the ring, in fact, they started, and take them all the way up the entranceway ramp and plant them
into
a podium at the top of the, you know, at the top of the stage. Of course, Cena won that one, but it was a dreadful match. That's the last one I kind of remember. May have been about 2016, something like that. So that's interesting. I will just say, I really like Ethan Page in this role. I think he just plays it so that blend of being entertaining, you know, and being a, you know, dislikable heel. I enjoy that. And I'm saying, you know, disrespecting the 40 million people of Canada, and Tavion's like, no, I've only got a beef with one. Maple syrup sipping, you know, whatever he calls him, you know. So, no, I enjoy this. I wonder if the match will live up to the entertainment value of the promos.
Sorry, yes, 40 million, not 40,000, as I said. But yeah, I think they've got to pair Ethan and Chelsea up on the main roster very quickly. There's so much chemistry there. I think it works great. But yes, best match ever, flag match coming soon to Poison Rana. We go to our next match. Jordynne Grace taking on Callie Armstrong, the Evolve Women's Champion. Callie backs Grace in the corner with some shoulder blocks. We get a camel clutch from Grace, and then Callie manages to muscle Grace onto her shoulders to break out of the hold, which was pretty impressive. After the break, Armstrong is in control. Callie runs the ropes, but Grace catches her with a spinning back fist, and then beast mode, the juggernaut driver, whatever you want to call it, for the win. And after the match, Blake Monroe comes out. They start to fight. Grace sends Monroe into the ring steps. Security separate them, and then Blake realizes that she's bleeding. She starts to shake and looks furious. But to start with, what did you think of the match, and then what did you think of the post-match?
The match was okay. I mean, I'm not that familiar with Callie Armstrong. I know she's appeared before on NXT, but at this point, when I was watching it, the commercial breaks were cut out. It seemed to happen during the point where I was rewatching, it was a pretty short match that I saw. I was told that Armstrong had managed to match strength with Grace, and that seemed to be the story here. That, you know, Grace gets a convincing win, but Callie Armstrong is powerful and big and not to be sniffed at. You know, I think the post-match was really the point here, though, I guess. And they got some fortunate color, which helped the feud. It's nice to see Jordynne, I think, be more aggressive. I haven't been in love with Blake Monroe so far since the move to NXT. Hopefully that can turn a corner. And I did enjoy the fact that once she noticed that her nose was bleeding, or her mouth, I'm not entirely sure, she did play it up a bit, you know, to the camera and stuff, and, you know, that it helped a little.
Yeah, I'd have definitely liked to have seen more from Callie Armstrong here. I think they could have gone a bit more 50-50 from what we saw on the actual, like, broadcast segment of the match. Apart from the muscling out of the camel clutch, there really wasn't anything about her, which I think is a shame when this is one of your champions. Yes, it's in a lower division, but I thought you could have got a bit more out of her there. I've not been enjoying this feud at all with Jordynne Grace and Blake Monroe, but the color helps for sure, but I can't really say I'm looking forward to this being dragged on. It's Blake Monroe, it's just, it isn't working at the moment. So maybe this kind of beatdown, we will get a bit of a character shift, which would be much needed. We need to see a bit more of a vicious side from her, I think, moving forwards. We get a video of Lola Vice. We get highlights of her winning the number one contenders match. And then we see her go off to her hometown of Miami. And she's in Little Havana. And she says, the best way to explain growing up in a Hispanic household is parents telling you that everyone has a sad story. And you either can make a sob story out of it or make something of it. And she says she loves being a Cuban in Miami. She loves having coffee at her grandma's, salsa on the corner. And growing up as a Cuban in Miami makes her tough. And her house is in a place called Mini Cuba. We see her playing dominoes with old men. And she says she feels closer to Cuba when she's here. And it's not a matter of if I can, it's when I can. And her mother says that she's always been driven. And we see her sister who says that she's a role model to her. And she ends the vignette by saying, you've met my mom. Wait till you meet my dad. There's a reason I put so much pressure on myself. And get clips of her kind of training with her dad. And it says to be continued. So I imagine next week we're going to see a lot more of the relationship of Lola Vice with her dad and training in the martial arts.
Yeah, I love this. I think it was one of the highlights of the show for me. I think it's like really humanizing when you can tap into somebody's real background and hometown and home life and their family getting involved in all of it. They're the most effective sort of vignettes that we see in pro wrestling. And I thought this was really, really good. And I think, you know, main roster could take a leaf out of this book with some of their characters.
Absolutely. Yeah. They did a bit of this with Lola for her match against Roxanne last year at Heatwave. And it really works. There is something that really connects with Lola Vice when she is talking about her background and her struggles. And I think the Cuban thing is definitely something that can connect. And I think having her working these AAA shows as well as helping, if we're going to get another one of these vignettes next week, I just worry that we do need to see something with her and JC as well to start heating this match up a bit, because JC seems too involved with what's going on in the tag division right now rather than her own championship. So I hope we get maybe one of these videos, but then leads to an in-ring segment with her and JC next week. I thought this was great. Anytime you can humanize these characters, especially your baby faces, it makes you root for them a lot more. And I think it is certainly you can do with that sort of lost lower mid-card talent on the main roster, like your B-Fabs, Neil.
Absolutely, yeah.
We move on and we see Josh Briggs versus Andre Chase. And this is a bit of a nothing match. Andre Chase like charges at Briggs immediately, but quickly gets taken down. Chase manages to catch him with a super kick on the apron, goes for a cross body, but gets caught and just slammed into the ring post. There's then a boss man slam in the ring. Briggs goes for a suplex, but this gets countered into a stunner, followed by a high cross from Chase, but a kick out. We then get a super kick from Chase, another, goes for a third, but gets caught with the choke slam and the big boot. And 1, 2, 3, Josh Briggs defeats Andre Chase. And after the match, he continues to beat down on Chase and beats up the rest of Chase U, putting, I think it was Uriah Connors, chokeslammed through the table.
Yeah. For me, this just is to cement one of the stories of the show, which is Briggs as one of the biggest heels on the NXT roster for that. I mean, this clearly was a foregone conclusion of a match in terms of who would win. So it's really all about the post-match. Andre Chase eats the pin and then, you know, gets beaten up, and then his two apprentices get beaten up too with the choke slam through the announce desk. So yeah, all just to serve the purpose of cementing Josh Briggs as someone hateful.
Yeah, I kind of don't like seeing I don't like seeing Chase in these roles, just like squash after squash. I think especially after we had that like pretty fun tag run with him and Duke Hudson, I think there is more you can do. But yeah, this is cementing Briggs as the big bad in NXT right now. I think I did gloss over. There was a segment backstage with Fatal Influence, Zoruka, and The Culling. And this is setting up a triple threat tag team match for next week, where the winners will get a future women's tag title shot. As always, I'd love to see these women's tag titles come to NXT for a bit. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, this was pretty short segment of them just basically all arguing with each other and Ava making the match. But I agree with you, Davey. I think the particularly when you remember who has the titles at the moment, they're clearly going in a particular direction with Alexa and Charlotte. And I think it's to the benefit particularly of Charlotte, who had that ropey return. So it's almost impossible to see them dropping the titles to somebody on NXT at the moment.
So, yeah, I imagine this will be on that homecoming show, this match. So you've got Charlotte and Alexa coming back down, which it's been a long time that they've come back to NXT. Alexa especially, I know Charlotte's come down. She had the like title run, didn't she, during the pandemic? But yeah. Alexa, it's been a long time. Who do you see out of the three challenging them?
Good question. I don't know, Davey, who do you see? And then
I could see them doing babyface v babyface. I think Zoruka would be Zoruka would be a fun fun match against, especially Sol and Charlotte going at it, I think would be a lot of fun. That's a match I'd like to see. Although they're kind of giving the Culling a lot at the moment. So
I was going to say perhaps the Culling is, you know, so we get the straight up heel babyface dynamic.
Heel babyface.
But I don't know.
And Fatal Influence have their kind of inner turmoil right now. So I can see them costing each other the match. We then see Trick, who is asked what he thinks about DIY attacking him 2-on-1. And Trick says, "You want to talk about history? Well, see me next week." Alluding to someone from the past coming back. Now, we think it's Mello, but what other NXT past people could it be?
Good question, because like I'm pretty fixated on it being Carmelo. But if you're looking back to perhaps the DIY heyday, it's hard to think of a name that springs to mind is gone. And gone for a very good reason, in some cases. So I think Carmelo's probably top of my list here.
Is Nakamura healthy? Because he's not doing anything, is he?
That's a very good question.
He's another heel I could see them just bring. I mean, it's a weird pairing, but he's very much a staple of NXT Black and Gold that they could bring in.
True. If he's injured, it's not been publicized. But yeah, he's not been on TV for quite a bit.
We go to our main event, Oba, Ricky, and Hank and Tank taking on Dark State. And Oba is dominating Cutler James early on, not James Cutler, Cutler James. And he goes in the corner and does the Ricky pose, the hand to the face, and sort of Ricky's smiling, Hank and Tank are smiling. They all seem to be getting on. Oba then hits a big ending to Cutler, and all four get in the ring and do a four-way honk honk, slamming Cutler in the middle of the ring. Osiris comes in with a black hole slam to Hank for a two count, and then Sugars and Ricky are in the ring, but Oba is technically the legal man, and Oba hits his toss powerbomb to Sugars, but it lands right on top of Ricky. This pisses off Ricky, who gets up and slaps Oba. They start to fight. We get the honk honk to Sugars, and then they go for the running power slam headbutt, but Osiris saves them, and then all four of Dark State do their quick tags. They go for their spirit bomb to Hank, but Tank makes the save. And then Cutler is beating down on Hank, and he's grabbing him by the face and says, "No one is saving you now." And then Hank calls for Joe Hendry and say his name, and he appears. Joe Hendry shows up, distracting Darkstate, allowing Hank and Tank to hit the running power slam headbutt for the win as NXT goes off the air.
Yeah. Pretty decent main event. Oh,
I hear you, Neil. There you go.
Sorry, Davey, but my green lights are showing on StreamYard, so hopefully the stream is coming through okay. But I thought this fairly decent sort of match. It was. I'm not a great lover of the impending opponents in the shape of Ricky and Oba. Like starting off as pals and during the match there's miscommunication or accidental contact and that leads to just this explosion of rage and suddenly they're, at the beginning they're kind of laughing, they're getting along well, hey, we can cooperate, we're doing each other's little moves. Ricky's doing the walk and as you mentioned, Oba does the pose. But this breaks down incredibly quickly when there's some accidental stuff that goes on. But that's fair enough. Leaving the four on to the manifestation of Joe on the ring apron. Some wrestling tropes here with the sort of, I think it's Cutler who's staring at the entranceway once the music hits, but Joe, of course, manifests on the apron instead, causing this distraction and the win. But it's fine. We get Joe back. Everybody loves to see him. And, the unlikely win for Hank and Tank.
So this will get Hank and Tank their rematch for the tag titles. Yeah, I wasn't really into this. I found it lazy. I find the partners that can't get along thing when you've got two baby faces so lazy. I'd much rather, stuff like we had for Lola Vice, like the prime target style things to just build up both opponents, have that mutual respect, but have it, think Rock Austin going into WrestleMania 17, those sit downs where both are baby face, but they're both saying how much this match means to them. I don't need the inadvertent bumps that cause this friction. Like they're all brawling onto the outside. I find it so lazy. And NXT use this brawling around the arena every single week.
Yeah.
It seems like Jordan Grace and Blake Monroe have been doing it. I'm also kind of tired of seeing Joe Hendry showing up, to be honest. I don't think there's any evolution in that. It's just a meme for me now. And until he actually joins NXT, I don't think we necessarily need to see him every single week. I think there's maybe some other TNA talent we could cycle in and out if that's what you're wanting to do. And I just didn't find the match. Like, we had that eight man a few weeks ago when we had Moose and Trick involved as well. And I thought that was a lot more, high octane, a lot more exciting than this was. It didn't do much for me, this main event this week.
Yeah, understood. And
that's NXT. Sorry, Neil.
Yeah, no, I was just going to agree with you, Davey, about it. I mentioned it already. The inadvertent contact leading to the sort of brawl is kind of played out, basically. They've done it so many times. But I will say I enjoyed this episode of NXT in the round. As we move towards homecoming. And then No Mercy. Davey, I think it's dropped off the stream just for the moment, at least on my end. Here he is. He's back. That's great. I was left having to vamp for 10 seconds there, Davey.
Sorry. Yeah, left and exited the StreamYard. But I thought this was an okay episode. There wasn't a match. Normally, there's still like one or two matches I really get into on NXT. And I can't say they had that. I am intrigued by the DIY Trick Williams stuff. That makes me excited for homecoming, and especially if it is a Trick and Mello pairing up again. I think that's a good gateway to get them as a team again on the main roster, which I think absolutely needs to happen. Really like the Lola Vice stuff. I think whenever they've done those, that style, call it prime target, call it whatever you want, I think they work really well and would love to see more than that. And I thought Josh Briggs was a highlight on today's show for me.
Yeah.
But I'd say it was more the promo stuff I enjoyed this week. Even Dark State's promo I enjoyed more than I usually do. I thought it was a much more promo-heavy show that was solid rather than the in-ring wrestling, which kind of underwhelmed me a bit this week.
I think that's a fair assessment. It's one that I would share. You know, as I said right from the beginning of the show, sort of the opener was solid enough, but things like the Lash extension on the table, but right from the beginning of the show, make you sort of go, you know, the wrestling here isn't wonderful. But like you said, the sort of show-long story of cementing Briggs as this really nasty piece of work that you want to see get his comeuppance. And again, for me, the Lola Vice piece, just a tremendous vignette.
So that's what we thought. We do throw up a feedback thread every week on our Facebook page. If you're not a member already, what are you waiting for? Just search for Poison Rana in Facebook. Look for the neon frog, and that will lead you to our private group where we share things. We share experiences at wrestling shows, stupid memes, discussions, and our NXT Facebook feedback thread. And we start with Magan, who says, a fine show that added some steam to Homecoming and No Mercy. I got such a kick out of seeing DIY return with their original song on top of that, to their old stomping grounds. Trick and Mello v. DIY is a must for Full Sail. Miz can stay home. He would be like a polar bear in Texas. Nice to see Callie Armstrong rub shoulders with Jordan Grace, and the eight-man tag had a fun ending with Joe Hendry as Hank and Tank's Deus Ex Machina instead of another Dark State stinker. Jada Lash was a strong opener as well. Happy birthday, Davey. Thank you, Megan. And finally, we go to Cameron, who says, happy birthday, Davey. Thank you. Mid-episode, Jada is such a star. She needs to be holding a title soon. I'm hoping the DIY stuff means Mello and Trick joining back up. Then when Trick loses the TNA title, they can be a main roster double act. I don't see anything for Trick on main roster as a solo star. I do eventually, but I do think it will help both of them incredibly to just be together to start with. And you can start with a feud with The Miz, kicking him to the curb, and then just go on from there.
I think that's the direction we're headed in, and I hope so. But I agree with you. I think that in the fullness of time, Trick has definitely got the charisma to be a main roster solo star, and plenty of time to get there.
All right. Well, that is it. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Thank you very much, Neil, for joining me. I got to shoot off and clean up this Airbnb now before we move on. But thank you again, Neil, and we'll chat very soon. Let me know what you want your Up Yours to pick to be, because we will get to it in the upcoming months, and any other world champions out there. But as for that, take care, be safe, goodbye. Ahoy!
What if you could design your own dental implant system from scratch? What would you change? Less complexity? Better bone preservation? Simpler digital workflows? A price that actually makes sense? That's exactly what Biotech Dental created with the Contact Dental Implant System. Contact implants promote osseointegration, preserve crestal bone, and simplify your implant procedures. With a single prosthetic connection, streamlined surgical kits, and seamless integration into digital workflows, the Contact Dental implant is quickly becoming the go-to choice for U.S. dental professionals. Your cases will be supported by a dedicated planning team who can provide surgical guides and answer any technical questions. Experience the difference firsthand. Biotech Dental will provide your first contact implant case completely free, including restorative components and surgical planning support. Clinically proven, intuitively designed, surprisingly affordable, discover why so many dentists are switching to the contact implant system. Visit biotechdentalusa.com to learn more.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.